Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour. We are talking with Andreas Bachmeier about vaccine injury, the survey that was done with about 18,000 people. That's an ongoing one that is on the website right now. And of course, the consequence here that has occurred after this, Andreas followed up with 111 cases, if you will, or people. And this is specifically in terms of children as well. And I wanted to get into that more now in the second hour here. Some of the consequences that you've seen, Andreas, with the vaccines. I mean, we know, as you mentioned, problems behaviorally, neurologically, autism, narcolepsy. There's a host of issues that have been attributed to vaccines. But what have you found out when it comes to this?
Well, the range of these side effects, they are so immense that you can't pick out a single side effect, which can't happen. You just can have so certain groups of side effects, which are very common. So I think one of the really most important one are these autoimmune side effects you have. And when you look at the autoimmune rate or the prevalence of autoimmune disease in the United States, the prevalence is around 7% right now of autoimmune disease, of all people, 7%. In the survey, I asked the people, or I asked for autoimmune diseases as well. The rate is at, I think at the moment, it's 0.2%. Huh. So this is like, I don't know, 4,000% higher.
Yeah, that is quite a bit.
And even, well, this is an official study which was done to look for prevalence rates of autoimmune diseases. So in my group, when I am in my group of the vaccinated people, I have the same rate. I come up, I think, with 8%.
Wow.
So it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
So it differs a little bit from country to country, but it's actually they're pretty high at the moment, these rates. And this definitely has something to do with the vaccines.
This is, of course, a precursor then to a lot of other diseases, really. I mean, autoimmune disease is basically just kind of opening that door, if you will, of having your own, you know, protection in your body to kind of become weakened and lessened. And that means, obviously, that a host of other issues can occur as a very, very indirect side effect. But as you said, Andreas, it's practically impossible to connect it to the vaccines then, right?
That's correct. And there are a host of autoimmune diseases right now. Well, if you look it up right now, you find probably hundreds of autoimmune diseases at the moment. There are some which occur very often, but you have a lot of autoimmune diseases which are not, not very common. And you can't bring up the vaccine topic here. So it's not, there's no, what do you call it in English? They're not related to the vaccines. So at least they think they are not related.
Yeah.
But all the autoimmune diseases have to do with your immune system, and your immune system is affected by the vaccine. So the rise of the autoimmune diseases has definitely to do something with the vaccines.
So how do you pin this on the vaccines? How do you prove that it has to do with the vaccines?
Well, the proof is actually when I treat these patients that some of these conditions, not all of them, but some of these conditions, they get better when they get the homeopathic remedy exactly for this vaccine. So there's a treatment which you can use to treating vaccine injuries. You give the homeopathic vaccine, or you give the vaccine homeopathically. So you give the vaccine in a homeopathic dose to the patient. And if the vaccine triggered the symptoms of the people, of the patient, the patient will react to this homeopathic remedy. Otherwise, the patient won't react. Hmm. So this is kind of an indirect proof that the symptoms have something to do with the vaccine, you know.
Did you develop this approach yourself, Andreas, or is this more known in the field?
This is a known approach. I think it was first invented, in quotes, by Tino Smits. That's a Dutch homeopath. And he, it's kind of a one arm of homeopathic treatment. It's not real homeopathy. It's not homeopathy because you give the same remedy, you know, with homeopathy, you give a similar remedy. And this treatment is called isotherapy, isotherapy. Mm. So you give exactly the same remedy again.
Interesting. So what are some of the results on this been, and what usually... is this also then a specific group of vaccines, or because I'd say then again we're talking about things like aluminum. Is there a similar approach that's taken to deal with that?
No, you need the exact vaccine. You have to give the exact vaccine again. So if it's, for example, you have a lot of neurological symptoms after the tick vaccination. It's called FSME in Europe or in German speaking countries, the tick-borne encephalitis. And this tick-borne encephalitis or this vaccination again, this is often resulting in neurological damages, which are very hard to treat. When you're lucky and you can treat it in the beginning, maybe you can fix that. But if you do it too late, you won't have a chance.
So what's some of the recovery in this, and how are the rates with this, would you say, in terms of getting people back up on their feet again after something like this?
Well, it depends on what they're having. It can take a month, but it can also take a year. For example, for children with developmental disorders, or autism syndrome, this can take a while. So you probably need at least 2-3 years to get the child back to normal, if you can get them back to normal. So this is also my approach to say, you better don't vaccinate on the first hand, because treating a vaccine damage is way harder than not getting vaccinated.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's the best prevention you have right there, just not to fall into the trap. Now, tell us a little bit more about the 111 follow-up cases that you did, and if there's any specific stories, if you will, there that actually stands out to you, some examples we could talk about.
Well, I think some very good examples are these stories of people which are living in, I think I have one story of a family in Canada, and they are in the fourth generation unvaccinated right now, completely unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. So these have to be 30, 40, 50 people completely unvaccinated, not even a tetanus shot. And I think this is very appealing, and it doesn't surprise me at all if you read that. But sometimes you get the feeling, how is that possible? Not getting vaccinated at all, and not even a tetanus shot, and still being healthy. Because you probably get the feeling that you can't be healthy without a vaccination.
Is this a view that people have really of human pasts, that we've it was just a miracle that we made it up until the 19th, 20th century, something like that, and then all those millions of years before that, or however long it is that we've actually been around, that we barely, we were walking on our knees in with perpetual disease,
Yeah, but I think that's a very important point you're making here. People Or a lot of people have the feeling that they can't survive without a vaccination. They need that to survive the upcoming years. But humanity is a little older than 100 years since we have the vaccinations. And while we survived until now, and we survived although we have we survived although having not no vaccinations till a couple or till 100 years from now. Or I think the vaccines were pretty common, or they started to get common in the late 1900. So where they invented the rabies shot, and then they had the smallpox shot, and all the against all these diseases.
Is there one of these that actually could have? I mean, your honest opinion, if you think that we hadn't developed vaccines and all that, would one of these have taken out, you know, all of mankind, basically, one of these diseases that came along?
What do you mean by a vaccine?
Yeah, that the what I'm saying is that, I mean, sometimes it's almost like the claim that, okay, if we wouldn't have developed the vaccines, the human race might not even have been here by now because of, you know, this or that disease. But is there any truth to such a claim?
No, I don't think so. Not at all.
No,
so,
no.
For example, if you look at the plague, there was never a vaccination. Well, there was a vaccination against the plague, but they didn't use it. At least not with a lot of people. And right now, we don't have a plague issue. Well, we have plague illnesses in different parts of the world, and we have it in India. But this is not a problem which we are facing right now. But still, without vaccination, plague was eradicated. So more or less eradicated. So we don't have that problem anymore. I think the eradication of lots of diseases have nothing to do with the vaccines. They have more something to do with the hygiene we have, how we live, how we eat. We're having better food. Sometimes not. But this is, I think, these are more important facts to prevent illnesses than the vaccine.
So that's really where the key is. I mean, I've heard that too. Allegedly, would just, you know, if more people would wash their hands, surprisingly, there would be, I mean, a large percentage of fewer, you know, diseases and the flu and everything else traveling around. I don't know if that's true, but it certainly is interesting that it says something about that. It's on those basic levels that many of these you know, diseases kind of perpetuate themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. So, you know, we have clean water. We drink clean water. We don't have we have sewerage right now, and so we don't get infected by drinking dirty water. And this is, I think, a main point. And the other point is, for example, with the tetanus issue, that when you have an injury, you go, you're probably going to the, either you go to the, if it's not too big, you go to the doctor, or you go in the MR emergency room. What is it called? ER, the emergency room. And then you are treated and your wound is treated. So they just look whether, so they take off all the tissue, which is necrotic. So they don't leave any necrotic tissue in your wound. So this is all taken out. Or they all take that out. And this is the main reason why we don't have tetanus anymore. Because tetanus is not, it didn't go down because most of the people having tetanus shots, because we have a really good wound care right now. That's why we don't have tetanus anymore. And if you take the people which are not vaccinated at all, so you have, in Germany, you have a couple of 100,000 people which are not vaccinated, even not against tetanus. You would have way more cases of tetanus If only the tetanus shot would protect you.
What does that do anyway, really? It's when you get a deeper cut of some kind, and what, do you know anything about the background of that? Or is there a bacteria that gets into the wounds, or what happens there? Why do they say we need it?
Well, the issue here is that if you get a wound, it can be infected by a bacteria. And this bacteria is producing a toxin. And this toxin then is going up in your, or is going in your organism. And this toxin is doing cramps of your muscle, or is producing muscle cramps. And this and the cramps are getting so they're getting so tough that your what do you call that? Your breathing muscles are affected. So this is the background of the tetanus thing. But for example, there are around 10% of all the tetanus cases we have. Either in Germany or in Western European countries. So around 10% of all cases, they appear with closed wounds, not open wounds, but closed wounds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, sounds a little strange, because when you think that the tetanus bacteria has to come from the outside in your wound, something has to be wrong here. It's around 10% of the tetanus cases, they appear with a closed wound. So you have a broken bone, you can have tetanus. So, but where are they coming from?
Right, yeah.
So the other major point with the tetanus thing is that if you get tetanus and you survive it, and it's not like 99% of the people will die when they have tetanus. The surviving rate is around, well, it depends on the country, but it's around, let's say, 80%.
Right.
You don't have immunity after the tetanus illness. So when you have tetanus illness, there is no immunity after the illness. So you can have it, a week later, you can have tetanus again. So I think that's a very important part, but because they say, well, how should the tetanus vaccine work when you don't even get an immunity after the illness?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a little strange. The other strange thing I think is that in about 40% of the people, you find tetanus bacteria in their intestines. So this is a pretty common bacteria. And 40% of the people have it in their intestines. And this toxin is water soluble. So when the toxin is water soluble, normally you should absorb it. But this is not the case. So this is another open question, I think, which have to be addressed here. And I think the only reason why we don't have tetanus anymore here in Western countries is because we really have a good wound care, not because people are vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people, for example, people who are producing vaccines for passive vaccines. So they produce antibodies for other people when they get when they have an injury. Then they get this passive vaccination, and there are lots of cases in this group of people these people have elevated antitoxins or antibody titers, and there are a number of cases where these people, they get tetanus anyway, even when they should be protected from the tetanus. And you know, these are all questions nobody will answer for you. And if you go to the doctor and ask these questions, well, the doctor will probably say, well, I don't know, maybe I have to look it up.
So what does that tell you about what tetanus actually is. Is simply something that just gets released in our body when we have severe wounds. I mean, it could, for all we know, then it might as well be related to stress or something like that.
Well, the thing is actually what it does. So normally tetanus is only occurring in wounds which doesn't have a good oxygen supply. So, for example, if you have a wound with a necrotic tissue, there is no oxygen supply there anymore because the blood vessels are torn and there is no blood flowing in there. So there is no oxygen in there. And the tetanus bacteria needs this anaerobic tissue to grow. So this is one prerequisite to get this tetanus. And actually, what was your question?
Well, yeah, more or less what it is. But if it's anaerobic, that's interesting because then it means that obviously it needs to grow without the supply of oxygen. But is that something that, again, then just naturally occurs in your body or
correct. And the thing is, what is happening? Because what is this toxin doing? The toxin is doing in the wound actually. When it develops, it's producing a cramp, or it's causing a cramp. And what do you have after a cramp? Just a question. What happens after a cramp? Do you have a good blood supply or a lesser blood supply?
I would guess lesser, right?
Nope. What?
Okay, so it's like having exercise to actually have a good blood flow. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, you have a good blood flow afterwards. Right. Yeah. So you're getting oxygen in this tissue. So I think this bacteria, even well, maybe when it kills you, but what it does is it's trying to rise or to make the oxygen supply better, that your tissue is getting oxygen, and then this will kill the bacteria anyway, because it's not growing with oxygen.
So it's a natural response by your body, much in the same way that when you have a fever, you also get these cramps and things to raise the body heat to actually get rid of the bacteria. Same thing.
Correct. And you know, when you think of I think it was the French army in the First World War, the French army wasn't vaccinated against tetanus. In the Second World War, they were all vaccinated, but the rate of the tetanus diseases were the same in the First and the Second World War. There was no difference.
Well, that's interesting.
So it's not, well, if you have, and the thing is, wounds during war, there are a lot of like shrapnel wounds and with a lot of necrotic tissue. And this is the main problem. So if you have a wound, go to the hospital and be sure that all the necrotic tissue is removed. And then you don't have to fear anything.
I see. Yeah.
So the what they are doing anyway, well, they ask you, well, you have your when was your latest vaccine shot, your latest tetanus shot? They ask you, but this is not the reason why you don't have it or you don't get it.
Right. Yeah, it's very interesting. Usually, you know, the body has an intelligence on its own and does certain things for a very very good reason, and then we think that something's wrong and then that we need to step in there and change it. And again, I'm not saying that in certain instances this have been there have been things that have helped people with their own application of our own understanding and technology and all that, but again, I just go back to that point. I'm not saying that we should perhaps suffer, if that's the right word, as we've done in the past, but the fact is that we are here now and mankind has made it for many, many millions of years, and the applications of chemicals and extra bacteria and viruses and all these kinds of things, it seems very it's like we're in an ongoing laboratory and we don't really know the full consequence of some of the things that we're doing yet.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, and it's the same topic would be fluoride,
Well, exactly. Yeah, of course.
Well, we still we had teeth before we had fluoride in the toothpaste. So good, healthy teeth, they have nothing to do with fluoride in the toothpaste.
That's right. Yeah. So what do you think is some of the reasoning behind this then? Is it simply the medical establishment, big pharma. All right, let's sell more. Let's come up with some stuff that that they need. Is it money and greed? Is there other reasons behind the experimentation? I know that in the army, for example, a lot of people are, it's really after the world wars periods, Second World War specifically, that things come into the world in a different way after that stage when it comes to the I call it the scientific dictatorship, but there's lesser, words you can use to describe it. But yeah. What's the reasoning, do you think, behind it? Why are we subjected to this?
Well, this is very hard to answer. So I had an interview a couple of weeks ago, and the host wanted to ask this question again. And he wanted to ask, well, maybe the reason is they want to, eradicate some people on this planet with these vaccines. Well, the thing is, you can't prove anything here. And I don't want to go into conspiracy theories and the thing is, it's hard to prove what the reason behind all this, because when you know the facts about vaccinations, maybe you have to assume sometimes, this is something is going really wrong here. But I think one big part is definitely the money. So you first get some money, a little money, for the vaccine itself. But you get way more money later when the people are chronically ill.
Yeah.
And if you can make, we just mentioned this, or I just mentioned the 7% here, autoimmune disease rate. So if you can make 7% of the people can make an autoimmune disease, you have them forever, because autoimmune diseases, they don't heal from it by itself. So you make the people constantly sick. And this is also the stories I get from the parents, which they tell me, for example, when they have three kids or four kids. So the first are vaccinated, then the second ones, maybe they are just partially vaccinated, and the last ones aren't vaccinated at all. And the ones which are not vaccinated, they are always the healthiest kids in the family. So I think this big pharma point you're making here is definitely something we have to consider. It's hard to prove. You can't prove it, but it's kind of logical, actually, because you make the people sick, and pharma only can survive when people are sick, and the sicker they are, and the more they get.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true, and it's a monetary incentive there, no doubt. I think as well, if we can make this into a joke, if you will, if we look at the different medical systems then in the world that we have, and one system is about making money on the patient, of actually keeping them coming back again, but then in different parts of the world you have a system where it's where you have primarily socialized medicine, where they have an interest of getting rid of the patients as soon as possible.
Correct.
So you think that they at least then would be in a position where they would research these things to try to keep people healthier, but that doesn't seem to happen either. So what the explanation there might be is maybe simply, of course, that we have that the pharmacological establishment is so strong when it comes to its education of the doctors and everything else, that no one has ended up in a situation really to question it beyond people like yourself and others, of course.
But isn't that changing? You were talking about China, right? So isn't that attitude changing, that I think in China, it's like you're only getting paid as a doctor and when your patient is healthy.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
So you have to keep them healthy, and you're not getting paid when they're, so they only pay you when they are healthy, and when they're sick, they're not paying you anymore.
Well, that's funny. And then, the realization of there, if you had, doctors that were honest and did their research on this, and as you said, because I mean, the results of many of these things are in the scientific report. So if people did their homework, which I suspect some people would do, then would discover, what to do or not to do, more or less, anyway, right?
Yeah, you can look it up. You can look up everything here, but you just have to know where to look it up. Everybody is getting an income from people who are getting vaccinated, actually. So the thing is, well, patients I have, you know, the problem is they are running from doctor to doctor with severe, for example, neurological problems they have. And well, they are probably visiting 10 doctors and they don't even get, after 10 doctors, they don't get a diagnosis. They don't have it. They don't show up with a diagnosis. They have something, but they don't know what they have. And then they are treated somehow. Well, maybe they are treated with cortisol, immune suppressants, whatever. But there is no actual treatment for that. But it costs a lot of money, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The procedures that are developed are of course, outrageous. And then when it's difficult or you know, kind of novel, if you will, it becomes more more expensive, etc. But I mean, there's something wrong with the entire field here, obviously. I mean, between things like chemotherapy and vaccines and just the crap, you know, frankly, that goes on within the medical field, with the additions of, as you said, you know, sodium fluoride in some countries, water supply, and it's the whole thinking that is, you know, completely wrong in my view. We have to look back further into human history, what we did to stay alive, and also a reevaluation, you know, of nutrition and food and everything else. And these are things that are largely, you know, not even discussed within the medical field.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think nutrition, fresh air, just sport, that's way more important than getting any remedies or getting a vaccine. So yeah. we are healthy because we eat well, we have good fresh air, we're doing sports, and that's why we are healthy. We are not healthy because we have these vaccines or we get 30 vaccines.
And it's funny too, Andreas, if we, you know, look a little bit about how science overall has been kind of glorified, and you can see these in the depictions of not only movies, but if you actually read some of the reports, scientific reports, health-wise and everything, all the diseases that are out there currently is, I don't know how many millions or maybe even billions now of dollars and euros that are being poured into research for vaccines against them, that there's always a vaccine that's going to solve, you know, the issue, like a cancer vaccine or something like that, AIDS vaccine. And this, I mean, it's an industry, right? That's what this is coming from, really. It's an industry that's managed to set itself up on the fact that there are many, many sick people out there. And obviously they're looking in the complete wrong direction. But as long as they do that, the donations are going to keep coming. The grants are going to be there. The tenure to the people who are, you know, doing research on this, it's still going to be there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And they're, well, developing so many vaccines. You just mentioned it. It's like it's hundreds or thousands of vaccines they are developing. And they are trying to develop, yeah, like you mentioned, cancer. That's a major, I think, major topic. They develop vaccinations against tooth decay, everything. And, you know, when they come up with a new vaccine, for example, they came up with a new vaccine, a meningococcal vaccine type B. We only had this summer, actually, we only had a vaccine against type A, C, and Y. And now they came up with another, a different one, and type B, which is very prevalent in Europe, the type B. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't develop it because the problem was that this type B bacteria is very similar to neurological tissue. And so when they developed these vaccines in former times, they had problems with the severe side effects. But right now, they developed that and it's on the market right now, and you will see in the coming years that suddenly meningitis type B will be very prominent. And you will read that in different stories, and then you will read, we have another meningococcal type B outbreak. And then, the cry for this or the call for this vaccine is getting louder and louder, and then they implement it in different countries.
So it's a little bit of a prediction there of what we might be seeing coming here, yeah?
Yeah, you can count on that.
Yeah.
So, for example, I think 10 years ago, I wrote in the beginning on my web page, I wrote somewhere, I don't know where it is, but I wrote that they're probably going to have measles vaccines for adults in the coming years. And that's what they are now recommending right now. They have, I don't know how it is in Sweden, but for example, here in Switzerland and Germany, they have all these big flyers lying around, or this big, what do you call that?
Pamphlets and stuff like that? Or?
No, not pamphlets, called like posters and bills.
Billboards.
Billboards, right.
Yeah.
Where they say, well, aren't you vaccinated against measles? Or look up your vaccination card, whether you are vaccinated against measles. And they want to push it because Germany and Switzerland, they promise, and all the other countries as well, they promise the WHO that they will, till 2015, they will eliminate measles in their countries. And they just push it. And now to push it, they even say that adults need this vaccine as well now. And this is with the meningitis B. You will see in a couple of years, we will have this vaccine as well. And then they're coming up with other vaccines, you know, then, I don't know, they will have like a herpes vaccine, what they are doing, and all these many vaccines. And they are all then recommended. It takes some time, but they will just add up, or they will come up in the normal vaccine schedule.
Well, it's obvious what you're saying here, because if we go back to 2009, the swine flu, quote, epidemic, unquote, it came out more or less information here that the patent for the vaccine and even the development of it actually started before the media started to harassing everybody with the fact that it was an epidemic and everything else, meaning implying that the whole organization behind how this unfolded, the infrastructure for it were already in place before they said that there was a problem out there, you know?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they had that. They knew it beforehand, because actually it was no epidemic, or it was no what they call it. Was it on stage 6 on the epidemic scale?
Maybe it was. Yeah, I can't remember that specifically, but yeah, there was. They tried to rank the severity of this, right?
Yeah, and that's the fear factor was a little that was very important back in 2009. So they made people think, well, I need this vaccine? When I don't get it, maybe I'm dead tomorrow, so I better get vaccinated. So and also when they sold these, you remember the Tamiflu. This remedy, which you can take when you are infected by the influenza virus, and when you take it, you're supposed to get, you are protected from the infection.
Yeah.
Well, but it didn't help. But people were buying it frantically, and they just all the pharmacies were sold out.
Yeah, that's right. The Tamiflu antiviral drug was revealed as a hoax, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Wow. And the people who got scared into taking these vaccines, a lot of these people have a lot of problems right now.
What kind of problems do they have? What happened there? I know in Sweden we talked about that briefly in the break. There we had an outbreak, but there was a lot of younger girls that got narcolepsy. That was like one of the headlines that came out of Sweden. But there's other symptoms in other countries, I believe.
I think narcolepsy was a very important condition, which was developing after the vaccine. But there were just a lot of autoimmune diseases as well, and a lot of diseases like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, which was developing. And a lot of people, and the thing is, the reason why it developed after the swine flu vaccine, because the vaccine contained not only, the usual additives, but it contained, for example, in the pandemics, there were several flu vaccines, but in this one, this contained this squalene. Maybe you have heard about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually quite the same as aluminum. It's working on a different. It's working a little bit differently. It's not a metal. It's an oily substance, and this oily substance is known to cause autoimmune directions or autoimmune diseases. And well, people, as I just mentioned, they were just scared into taking these vaccines because they thought, well, I need it, otherwise I don't survive the upcoming weeks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. People are scared into submission. They run to the doctor and there they go. What would you say in terms of accuracy with any of this, really? I mean, again, well, all you can do is appeal to, people's ability to think for themselves and do research and you know, piece the puzzle together with the aid of the alternative media, if you will, that are, at least back in 2009, heavily reported on all these things and exposed the fraud, if you will, around this. But is it just we shouldn't simply be dragged into it when we hear talk about the new whatever it is that's going to come along in a year from now or before that? You know what's going to happen, you know? So they're going to hype it up and they're going to try to scare people into taking it. Should we just avoid it? Is there any truth that there could be any pandemics or bigger, you know, viruses coming onto the scene that might be real and threatening us for real? What do you think?
Well, not at the moment. No, I don't think so. And I think what they did in 2009, because they had to throw away so many vaccines afterwards and they scared the people, and people, they won't believe anything anymore. So they have to come up with something really bad.
It's not, sorry to interrupt, but it's not one of those kind of, what do you call it, the boy who screamed wolf kind of scenarios, where they intentionally are trying to expose the fraud of how it's a big setup. But then at the end of the day, you know, something in a year or a couple of years from now, something that's really is vicious and out there gonna comes onto the market. And then then you would have your depopulation virus right there. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know what they want to come up or what they are coming up with. But they have to be really convincing that people get vaccinated, at least for this kind of illness.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If it's not, it has to be something else than influenza. If they come up with something else which is not influenza, they might have a chance to convince the people. But it's very hard to convince a lot of people getting vaccinated against a new form of influenza, I think. Or it's not, some people will get convinced anyway, but there are more and more people who are thinking, well, I'm not taking that anyway, so I don't take that.
Yeah. It's an interesting story. It's fascinating and it's scary at the same time, because you have real people that are affected by this, and of course, as you said, children, that's the real target here. That's what you've been monitoring and watching. And so how long have you followed up on this, if I put it that way, or if there's other cases where the parents have monitored? Let's say you talked about the family in Canada, there was the fourth generation, they're doing fine, but is there any more other cases that you've seen of children who has grown up and become teenagers or something like that, and they're doing okay?
Well, even in the survey, there are a lot of people which are way older than just 5 or 6. There are a lot of people which are 30, 40, 50. So I think like over 500 people are over 19 years old. I don't have the exact number right now. I have to look it up. But there are a lot of people which are not belonging to the young people. To the very young generation. So there are a lot of elder people which are not vaccinated.
Yeah.
And you don't see these common diseases with them. So they don't have these common diseases. And the one thing I wanted to mention, which is, I think, very important, if you look at the package leaflet or in an insert, the problem is that they writing these inserts with the they are basing these insert on their clinical studies, but the rate of vaccine damages which are not reported around they are around 95 at least 95%. So only every 20th case is reported.
I see. Yeah.
So you can't trust the package leaflet. And when the package leaflet says, well, this is a seldom occurrence of this condition, well, you can multiply it by 20 or even higher. And then you have the real occurrence of this condition. Hmm. So this is, I think, that's a very important part. And people have to be aware of that problem, that these package insert, they tell the truth, but they don't tell the truth in exact numbers. So they are not seldom these cases. They come up more often.
The devil's in the details, and usually
the detail.
The numbers are there usually, or they skew it in some way if the numbers, as you say, is there with statistics and everything else, and it's very clever. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about is: do you also help, people currently? Andreas, do you have a reception or something like that in Switzerland where you are at now?
Yeah, I'm having a homeopathic practice, and I'm treating lots of vaccine-related illnesses. This is probably like 60% right now, or 50% what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because there are not many homeopaths doing exactly this kind of treatment. I don't know why they are doing they are doing homeopathic treatment of vaccine injuries, but this is very often not helpful. So if you just give a homeopathic some homeopathic remedy like Tuya, there's a homeopathic remedy, it's called Tuya, which is supposed to be against any vaccine, or it's for vaccine damages. But this maybe helps only in 1% or 2% of the cases. Hmm. And most people with a vaccine damage, they are pretty alone, doctors can't help them because there is no treatment. There is no conventional treatment for this. So they're all always showing up in naturopathic practices.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. People are scouring to find anything at all that could help them out of the situation, when people are, of course, desperate in that way, they're willing to try, unorthodox, as I said before, kind of measures to do that. And it's just, are there other, as far as you're concerned, are there other type of things that would help beyond homeopathy? Have you heard of, for example, treating any disease with nutrition or anything like that? More other measures?
Well, I think this would be an important part in the treatment. But when you treat it only with, for example, nutrition, then it can take very long time. I know some of these cases, but it took years, and it only gets slowly better. So I don't have always success with this homeopathic treatment where you give the potentized vaccine. But it's helping very often, and I think it's a good way to treat the vaccine, because you're really treating the vaccine you got. You're getting the exact vaccine again as a homeopathic remedy, and you only get a reaction to this remedy when the vaccine itself caused your symptoms. So if you don't have, if you have symptoms or a condition which was not caused by the vaccine, you won't react to the vaccine you are taking. So to the homeopathic vaccine, actually.
I see.
This is a pretty good way to, well, that's what I mentioned, to prove indirectly how the vaccine is working, or how the whether the vaccine caused something in your organism.
Right. Yeah.
And there are other therapies out there. For example, if you can be sure that the aluminum is a major factor, you can try these chelating therapies where they try to take out the aluminum out of your body. But this chelating therapies are where you have to go to the doctor, you get an injection, or you get these, what do you call it? These compounds which are binding the aluminum, and then you can they will show up in your urine later.
Yeah, it's like chromium, I know, is one of them, and I think the other one was bromium or something like that. I forget the second one, but exactly, there are certain things you can bind it with, allegedly, and that helps to pass.
It's like
it.
Kind of sulfur components,
right?
But it's not it's not for everybody, actually.
Of course not. You have to be careful with it. You can't just take these things and then expect it to be right. I know personally of people who are they have, you know, more naturopaths, and they make an analysis on your hair and stuff like that to begin with. So you make sure exactly what you need to add to that to balance your metals and take certain things out, you know?
Yeah, correct. So I think, you have to look whether you have somebody which is close to treat this these vaccine-related conditions you are having. Well, the thing is, what I'm offering sometimes, I don't do that very often, but as we speak here over Skype, I can offer that to my patients too, because a lot of people are calling me from, for example, from northern part of Germany, and as I'm sitting here in Switzerland, this would be a long way to go.
Oh,
and
sure.
So you can do that sometimes over the phone, but this is not the best way to treat that. So best would be to find somebody who's treating vaccine illnesses and vaccine injuries in not just once a week or just once a month, but very often.
Yeah, regularly, something to deal with that. Now, and of course, you have information about that on the website in terms of treatments and how to contact you if people are interested in that too, correct?
Yeah, that's all on the website, correct, yeah.
All right, well, very good. This has been very interesting. Is there anything else you wanted to add or something like that before we wrap things up with this time? And again, of course, you can give us the website and give us the title of the book so people know where to pick up that. But if there's anything else, please go ahead.
Well, actually, I don't know how whether you have listeners from France or from Spain as well.
We do. We have from all over Europe.
Okay. Because both of the books, well, the book, The Vaccine Free, is the English version, which came out first. And then there's a German version as well. And these, the English book and the German book are now translated into French and into Spanish.
Ah.
So, and the French book is already out. It's called Vivre sans vaccine. And the Spanish book will come out in, I think, a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I guess. The French book was translated by a French pediatrician. She's retired right now, and she's just giving lectures about vaccinations, but she's a pediatrician, and she translated the book, the English book, into French.
All right, excellent. That's very good, and that's going to be available and up on the international website as well, I guess, right?
Yeah, correct, and then it will be available, I think, over Amazon. And what's important, I think, with the books, because some people, when they buy it, they think, well, there's nothing scientific in there. It's just stories from people. But this was exactly my intention, just to put these stories, because the scientific facts, they can read on the internet. They can read it on my website. This is just about the people for the people, you know.
Well, exactly. I mean, I understand what the point is there. A reference frame for people who are interested in realizing what it would be like for them if they wanted to choose not to vaccinate their child, so they can read about real life people, you know, their stories and what's happened to them. That makes absolute sense, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you step out of the of the normal doing things, if you say, well, I'm not vaccinating anymore, so you are probably pretty much alone in your field. So there are not that many people who are not vaccinating.
That's right.
So there are some, but you have to find them.
Yeah.
So when you're living in a little town, it's, well, people are not running around with a sign saying, well, my people are not vaccinated.
Right.
So it's hard to find, and I think it's good to have to read other stories of families which are not vaccinating. I think
I agree. It's a great addition to, as you say, to the science that is there already that people can read, and then of course with that make up their own mind. And now there's an addition in terms of stories from people, is it pretty much from around the world, or is it?
Yeah, it's like the English book contains stories from the US, Canada, from all these English speaking countries, more or less. So the most stories are US, USA, Canada, UK, and Australia, New Zealand, and some other parts of the world. In the German book, you only have more or less Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And the translated books, they contain a little more stories. So this French book is the translation of the English book. It contains all these stories which are in the English book, plus stories from France and Belgium, from the and the French part of Switzerland. And the Spanish book is the translation of the German book and contains, in addition, Spanish stories from Spain.
Wow. Well, that's cool. That's nice. You've divided it up in that way, but yeah, definitely, this is good stuff. We'll send people to the websites, of course, for more details and more information. Vaccineinjury.info and then impfschaden.info as well. Well, thank you so much, Andreas. Really enjoyed this. It was very interesting talking about this with you. So thank you again for coming on, and keep up the good work. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Henrik. Thank you.
We have more programs coming your way soon. Next up is Judy Byington on the book 22 Faces, the story of ritual abuse survivor Jenny Hill. Then we have Joseph Erle and Scott DeHart, Louis Proud, Anthony Peake, John Whitehead, and Richard Dewhurst, to name a few. Thank you for listening today, and of course for your membership. You're welcome to tune in again. We'll be back in just a few days. Stay cool and look ahead. Take care.